This is my fellow friend, Kendra Grant, and former academic advisor. Don't you own your own business too? Yes, it's called Everything and Nothing, and my subject today is athletes. Like, what to do after, or what is there after? Is there anything after? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had my own experience about being the 9-to-5 athlete and then there just being nothing.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Oh no. It's definitely a tricky transition if, you know, you have been in this student athlete bubble for so long, and you got to think about it as student athletes at the collegiate level. You've been doing this since what age? When did you start competing?
13.
Yeah.
13 or 12.
So, I mean, you have at minimum a decade of doing your sport. So then once you're done doing your sport, it's like what do I do? Who am I? Type of thing. This big identity crisis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I should introduce you and like what you do and like everything. I can always edit it later or whatever, but this is my fellow friend, Kendra Grant, and former academic advisor. Don't you own your own business too?
Yeah, so Total Package Performance, I started that in 2018 and in the rebuilding process now, trying to figure out what direction I want to go with it, since I want to add the mental health component with that. But basically, the spirit behind Total Package Performance is kind of what you were alluding to already. When you finish competing, how do you use the skills that you learned in your sport to be successful in other areas of your life? So being able to use what we call transferable skills. So as a student athlete, you have to learn a lot of time management, have to learn communication, leadership, all these different intangible skills that can help you be successful in other areas. So that's my passion, to help student athletes identify those skill sets that they have and be able to use them in other aspects.
Why I haven't come to you sooner, I'm not sure about this specific issue. Because like today, or just recently, really, I started like really working out again. And when I mean like working out again, I mean like going hard till like really freaking hurts. And like, I liked it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, all I want is more, but that kind of stuff, you know, it's not making me money. I mean, it's making me healthy.
Yeah.
But like, that's like all I ever used to do. That was almost like how I made money being in school, was that was providing my life.
Mm-hmm.
And like trying to transfer the skills that I have into a regular job is difficult because not everybody has an athlete mindset. And it's just like, so like, cause I became a manager, and I was all about the teamwork, all about the huddles, all about the positive stuff on the stuff and like getting it all ready. And then just like, either it was management or it was like usually it was other external forces, but like I tried to incorporate it, but I don't know if I incorporated it how I wanted to interpret it or how I thought I should do it or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I feel myself trying to put the athlete life in my daily life.
Mm-hmm. Naturally so.
I'm not exactly sure how, though. Hmm. Especially COVID, because I'm not understanding how people are going to the gym, I guess, personally. But
a lot of YouTube, a lot of a lot of apps out there, a lot of outdoor workouts people been doing. But I want to comment to your statement about trying to bring the athlete huddles into the workplace. I think something that's important for any former student athletes transitioning into the workplace to keep in mind is that although you're coming with this specific skill set of oh, I know how to work on a team and all this stuff. Everybody doesn't necessarily have that experience and may not necessarily value that interdependence that comes with being on an athletic team and understanding that everybody has a role to contribute to the bigger picture type of thing. So what's important is to be able to use your ability to work with different people to kind of meet them where they are so that you can still kind of work with them in a different way that you may have worked with your teammates who already understood, you know, your approach and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, you know, I saw them every day. Blood, sweat, tears. Like, we already know how each other works.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's like, no, I guess you're right, because a team can't become a team until they become a team. And I was just like, let's be a team.
Well, and kind of rush into that process. And it's a, because when you have that sports team, it's already kind of orchestrated for you. You have that group already combined, so you kind of force it. Yeah.
Like, the diet, at least diet guides, you know, diets, stretching, help, academics. Like, I'm not gonna lie, being an athlete was a little bit easier than being, I take that back, not easier being a regular student, but it, like, it gave me more structure than a regular student.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I miss the structure.
Oh, that structure is... it's so huge. We talk about it with a lot of like former student athletes who, you know, come back and chat with us, and they say like, oh my gosh, I had no idea like how much like life was set up and how difficult it is to navigate like just day-to-day tasks without having that, you know, support system that we had in athletics. Like, being able to go to your coach or your strength and conditioner, compliance or academics to like help you go through things, and you're out there like, okay, so I guess I'm supposed to call this person to figure this out. But yeah, that structure is huge. And I think a big thing when you transition out is being able to establish your own routine. So I heard you talking about you starting to work out and go hard again and everything, and getting that getting that adrenaline rush from that.
Yeah, I don't know why I kept myself from doing it for a while, but like as soon as I did it, I was just like, oh, this feels so great. Even though it feels so awful, but like it feels so great. Like this morning, because I haven't really ran in a minute, like for a good minute, like a long period of time. I do like short bursts of like dancing and like other stuff, but this morning when I was running, it was like, oh my god, the shirt hurts so bad. And then I wanted to stop, but I just kind of sat there and I like looked up. I was like, wait, I can't, because I gotta get home. Mm-hmm. Looks like I gotta keep going. But like, even though it hurt so bad, I wanted to puke when I got to my driveway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after I stretched and caught my breath, I was like, I feel calm now.
Yeah.
I wake up with a lot of anxiety. Let alone the whole, like you said, incorporating the mental health part.
Mm-hmm.
Also big, because what, in my case specifically, I have like a mental health illness that I didn't know about, that I've been trying to work through myself. And I didn't know that I was using sports to cope.
Mm.
With structure, with the adrenaline rush, and it was all healthy. But once that was gone for me, I was like confused to where and why I wasn't feeling like how I was before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was like honestly completely lost. I was like, what do I do? I tried to work out after, but then I got, you know, other external forces like alcohol and drugs and whatever. It keeps people very distracted.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do anything, but like, I guess it's hard to how would someone find out if they're using sports to cope with a trauma?
Yeah. Well, first I want to go back before answering that question to just thank you for sharing and being vulnerable in this space, because I know it's not easy to, you know, talk about that and share pieces of yourself with others. I think honestly a lot more athletes than you may imagine use their sport to cope with things and challenges that they have going on. It's almost like when you mentioned, you know, drugs and stuff, it's almost like an escape too. It can be an escape for some people. Not saying that sports is an escape for everyone, but it can be. But to answer your question about how do you know that, I think the only way you would truly know is if you've done that work, you've engaged in like that self-awareness and actually kind of evaluated what's going on in my life. So these events have happened in my life. Have I given myself space and permission to feel and think what I need to about this experience? Or did I try to do something to avoid these things and then somehow they manifested in a different way and I didn't even expect it to? So just being like honest with yourself, like, have I truly like dealt with those things that I've gone through? And then I'm biased, so I'll always be a strong advocate for counseling, but I think everyone should at least go to a counselor and sit down and talk about things. You don't have to have some big you know, thing going on with you, but I just think it's important just to have an unbiased opinion and be able to express yourself freely without judgment.
Huh. That also makes me think, because that was something I was trying to pursue when I was at UNF. And of course, after my eligibility was up, because I used my other eligibility at a different school and then came to UNF, but I still needed to graduate and I did not graduate. Other external courses. But what I was going towards was almost like a guidance counseling athletic guidance counselor was the title I gave it for the interdisciplinary studies. Because I was going towards, I believe that maybe there should be some kind of like counseling core that is just for athletes. Mm-hmm. Because me going to counseling at UNF or a regular person going to counseling at UNF is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge wait list. And so, like, having that available mm-hmm. maybe could help other people figure out, are they using sports? Mm-hmm. Or what will help you get out of your head for your neck? Like, I know that one of yours is, like, for the mind. Like, how do you get out of your head for, you know, a game? Mm-hmm. Get yourself in like the healthy mindset. So then you got someone for the mind, you got somebody for the emotions, and you got someone for the physical aspect.
Absolutely. And Alice, what I'll tell you is, since you have left UNF, there has been a program that was created to counsel just athletes. Osprey Perch, and they have counselors that's dedicated to athletics specifically, so that's their population that they work with. They have counselors that are dedicated to residents' life, so housing, and then counselors for like any type of conduct or any self-referrals that the counseling center can't take due to the wait list. So your wish has been granted in that regard of there is something in place now.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dang it. Yeah. That's so cool. Dang.
Yeah. I know, yeah, dang it for you, because it wasn't in place when you were at the university, but good now that the student athletes do not have to worry about the wait times and they do have counselors. And graduate students from the clinical mental health counseling and the social work master's programs, and they are supervised by licensed clinicians that are either grounded in social work or grounded in mental health.
Mm-hmm. Dang. Mm-hmm. Dang. Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But no, I agree with you. I think that any type of special population, whether it's athletes, whether it's military or whatever special population, they need to have professionals who are embedded in that culture, because it's just different than, you know, doing day-to-day life without having all that structure or having all these tasks that you have to maintain while also balancing your personal life.
Yeah, because regular life is chaotic, and you can still have a structure and it still be like weirdly chaotic, but I mean it, at least you have that structure. But like, it seems to be that, you know, taking care of the mind is more of a cool thing to do lately.
I'm glad that a lot of people are jumping on board. I hope that it's not a trendy thing where it's cool now and then years go by and they're like, oh, okay, whatever. But I think that COVID, weirdly enough, helped support the seeking of mental health services too. And also like having celebrities advocate for mental health also has made it where people don't view it as stigmatizing.
Yeah, still very stigmatizing, but working at it. Like, at least the world is working on it. Because that was actually my first podcast episode, was just like mental health, like stigmas. Like, no one can really talk about anything because it makes somebody uncomfortable, whether they feel bad or they're like, get it away from me.
Don't touch me with a 10-foot pole with that. And just even when you're talking about, like, you know, just share how you feel, like, whether you feel bad, you think about, like, how you walk past people, like, hey, how you doing? And what is the response people say all the time?
I don't know. I haven't been out in the world in a little.
Well, you know, they say like, oh, I'm fine, or I'm good, or I'm okay. But no one's gonna, like, if you're having a crappy day, nobody's gonna, like, really, you walking past a stranger, oh, hey, how you doing? Oh, I'm feeling horrible. I'm feeling crappy. Even if you are, you're gonna say, oh, I'm feeling fine. That's just the...
Right. That's just the avoidance. Because it's like, we're not allowed to feel low. And that's just like so weird to me. But, and it's like, because no one's allowed to feel low, everybody feels low
in secret though. So so people are suffering in silence because they feel that nobody really wants to hear how they truly feel, if it's other than fine or good or even okay.
And that's just wild, because as an athlete, I was going through a lot of stuff while being an athlete, considering my home was very abusive and like I didn't have anything but sports. Oh shit, where was I? Oh no, I had a reason for this. Whoa, I lost my train of thought.
Was it connected to like not being able to share how you truly feel?
Ah, like on the team. Thank you. There we go. Because I made another episode. I think it was the same mental health stigma, where I was playing volleyball, high school volleyball, and things were really rough in my home. And I used to be a cutter when I was a teenager, like very bad. And I made it very noticeable. And I was like, playing volleyball, wearing a tank top, you know, my arms are all cut up and I'm blocking, like I'm at the front part of the thing and nobody's wanting to say anything. Why is it that nobody wanted to say anything? Because, like, wouldn't you want your athlete to be at their best, to perform their best? Because I don't have a fat head or nothing, but I was one of the best sophomores on the team, and I only trained for like 2 months. And so already the team didn't like me, so I was like, and no one gonna say anything?
I think it makes people uncomfortable to talk about like real things that people are going through, especially if they don't themselves feel equipped to help. Like, maybe they ask and then they're not expecting like whatever response you have, so they just feel, oh well, I'll just avoid it altogether. Maybe they notice it and, you know, just say, well, maybe somebody else will step in. It's like bystander effect almost.
As a coach, right?
Yeah.
That finds it funny for me that a coach wouldn't say anything to their athlete about anything like that.
Yeah. And that's why now they have what they call like mental health first aid trainings, where you know, you can train people who are at the front lines of working with athletes. So you have the coaches, the trainers, of like, what are some signs to look for? And for your particular situation, that would definitely be, you know, a sign that, hey, this person needs my support. This person needs to be connected to resources and needs help. And then being able to recognize that and connecting you to that person, because yeah, maybe you are not qualified to provide the help, but you're qualified to at least connect that student that you're coaching to someone who can help them. So I'm glad that they have these in place now.
Yeah. And like, you know, there were some coaches who tried to help me. Like, it was like the little things, like giving me ride homes when I couldn't get home, or like getting me dinner at like a track meet or something like that. Mm-hmm. And like, it was like little stuff. And that's why I think I always looked so hard up to coaches. I was like, it's like, you're gonna save me or help me or whatever. And it gets like weird, because the person you think that's supposed to help, and then they weren't helping me, and I was like confused. I was like, what kind of coach?
Very disappointing.
A little bit. I mean, my school was, I was like one of maybe three or four Black people in my whole class. Mm-hmm. I graduated like 800 kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was just like, they only cared that I was good.
Wow, that sucks.
That my volleyball experience wasn't that great, but like track was everything. Mm-hmm. I loved track.
That's another element. I'm glad you brought race into the conversation, because honestly, even though we're having a conversation as a collective about mental health and the importance of being able to connect with a professional, we are still behind the ball when it comes to Black mental health and Black people connected to services, because it is very stigmatized in the community. But we're trying to do that work, but we got a ways to go. I'm actually reading this book right now, Unapologetic Guide to Black Mental Health.
And who's about it? For whoever's listening, who's it by?
It's Rita Walker, PhD. So I'll put it in the camera so you can see.
Okay. I was not going to spell her first name like that either.
Yeah, but the just to give you a little snapshot of the bag, the excerpt, it says, "We can't deny it any longer. There is a Black mental health crisis in our world today. In addition, the effects of undereducation, poverty, and systemic racism have greatly impacted African Americans' access to effective mental health treatment. It's time to take Black mental health seriously." And it says some more things, but I just wanted to share that little excerpt with you.
Black mental health. Because, okay, my dad is... He's a quarter or a half Native American and half Caribbean or Bahamian or something like that. But, you know, he's darker toned. He also had used sports to cope. Mm-hmm. He used fighting. And, you know, he became a world champion kickboxer, and he owns his own gym, and he does all blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. The things and the stories that he's had to tell me for his mental health and trying to get by as a Black athlete, especially like in the 60s, 70s.
Oh man.
I'm just like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm trying to pick a specific instance. I don't know if I have a specific instance for my dad, but like, he's going to be on my podcast later, and that's going to be great. But in terms of me and Black mental health, like, I went to my dad's gym, also in an area where there's not a lot of Black people. If anything, it was more Hispanic or, yeah, mostly Hispanic and Caucasian. And so I started going to his gym when I was like 12, 13, and I started to fight. But it was, as soon as I walked in, I was expected to be good. One, because I was the only Black person in there. Two, I was his kid.
Oh, man.
Because I looked athletic, because I was Black, they assumed I was good. And that happened to me all through high school because I wanted to be a weightlifter. So I joined the weightlifting team. I was like 119 pounds at 15. So like, they were like, of all sports, why did you choose that one? Because, you know, I got long legs. My wingspan is 6'1 and I'm 5'10. So they're just like, weightlifting. So I started track and I was a thrower. And they were like, no. You need to use your legs. And I was like, for why? I want to throw. I ended up doing high jump. Mm-hmm. And then, like, after that came volleyball. Track was over, and the head volleyball coach comes over, and he's like, why don't you try out for the team? I'm like, sure. I've never played volleyball before. He's like, well, our summer camp is $300. And I was like, oh, I don't have money for that. And he goes, it's okay. We'll pay for you to go. And I'm like, so you have all of these 50-some-odd Caucasian girls paying $300 to play volleyball for a summer camp, and you're gonna let me go free because you think I have talent because I can jump high and I'm Black? Ah!
Yeah. Yeah. Happens more times than not.
Ah! Like, oh my gosh, this, it still happens.
Mm-hmm.
It still happens. And I think it was after track, and I went into a Muay Thai gym because, you know, that was one of my foundations of how I learned sports was fighting, like my dad did.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I like the release. And so I went to a gym, and somehow they were like, what's your last name? And I don't know how they knew my dad. I don't know how. But they're like, oh my God, you're Paul's daughter. And I was like, okay. So they're like, let's go and do all of this crazy shit. And I'm like, I haven't fought in like 4 years. Like, I'm not just going to miraculously be amazing, but they expected me to, so I tried. And I shouldn't have, because I was sore and I hurt the next day, but I felt like I needed to, because it was expected of me because of my athleticism.
Man, it's disappointing and it's exhausting to have to live up to a stereotype or an expectation or whatever the case may be.
Oh, especially my dad just being a fighter, like, and a world champion, and like has his own stuff and like foundation of followers. And I was just like, I don't know what you want.
That's,
but I wonder how many other, like, professional athletes have kids and they're like, this is you now.
Yeah, I was just gonna bring it back to, I'm sure a lot of like college student athletes and even those who go on to be professional have kind of those similar experiences as you, of feeling like you have to live up to your parents or other relatives' legacy or whatever the case. So even in my family, my dad played basketball, so you know, I played, then my little brother and sister are now playing, so it's just that expectation. And he was a great shooter. He still can shoot the ball, and it's like, oh well, you better be able to shoot the ball. You're Marcus Grant's kid or whatever.
Right. And it's like, well, you developed that skill on your own, so I'm just supposed to have it now. I just have it. Oh God. Yeah. So, dang. We got so much good stuff in this little bit of time. That's so exciting.
Oh yeah, that Black mental health can be a whole segment by itself. But no, I'm glad that we were able to integrate that into the conversation today, and maybe a idea for you for future podcasts that you do.
Yes. And I'm also very grateful as well for being a student athlete, because then it wouldn't give me the skills that I do have now. Because I do have time management skills. If I'm like, that's one of the things that I am grateful for, is time management. I've always been great about time to begin with, but like I haven't been so up to date with it lately, but once started working out, and all of a sudden I'm like, wow, I kind of want this and this at a certain time and this at a certain time. But is there any advice for maybe athletes out there who maybe just are not sure where to go, what to do? Like, for the fresh ones, or maybe ones that are still maybe trying to figure it out?
I would say it's going to be different for everyone, but it's important to find what you're passionate about and what you want, basically, like, your legacy to be at the end of it all. What is it that, outside of your sport, because obviously they're gonna be like, oh well, my sport, I want to play this until I can't play anymore, but what else are you good at? What other skill sets do you have? Because I always give student athletes a hard time when I work with them and say, okay, what are you good at? Oh, nothing beside my sport. I said, no. We can't finish our meeting until you let me know something else that you're, passionate about, that you have fun, that you lose time doing. Pay attention to those things. And be intentional to make time to do those things. I know it's hard when you're a student athlete, because you're like, oh well, I'm doing my sport, I have to make sure I get good grades and do it over again, repeat type of thing. But it's important that you do make time for those other hobbies and gifts, because it's gonna serve you well and being a more balanced individual once you finish, and you won't feel as lost or like a fish out of water.
Great advice from Kendra Grant. Yes, I've had plenty of great advice from Kendra Grant. My couple years left, I was at UNF. It was a couple years, something like that. Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, I mean, we still have all... I was in your office a lot. Probably because I felt very comfortable to vent to you about stuff. But I am glad that you did come for my show today. Thanks.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that, that you did feel comfortable. That's one of the things that I aim, like, whenever I'm working with someone or just talking to them, there's this, I'm going to butcher the Maya Angelou quote, but people forget what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel type of thing. So I want to make people feel like comfortable being around me and not feel like, there's any type of judgment or anything like that. And I definitely appreciate you reaching out so I can be a part of your movement to, get great information out to people and connect with people during the pandemic. I know it's been hard for people to connect and feel like they may be isolated and stuff. So this is really good. Super proud of you for doing it. Happy that you're doing well.
Thanks, because I already made my other podcast about, because my of my certain situation. Actually, I don't know why I'm like, because I'm trying to be comfortable talking about it, but when I tried to kill myself, it was actually 3 years ago yesterday. Yep.
How was that for you, like, saying that at this moment and thinking and reflecting on what's happened between that space and now?
I feel slightly relieved that I can say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very ashamed of it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And at least a good 75% of it wasn't of my own doing. The other 25% was my own doing, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
With other outside factors of trauma I had never even knew was trauma to deal with mental illness, with just a lot of accumulation of things. And while I was going through that stuff, I was in your office because I felt comfortable enough to be in your office. Even though if I was like really hard to talk to sometimes, but like I was okay being in your office.
Mm-hmm.
And you were one of the first people who did come to like visit me while I was in the hospital too.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
is another reason why I value your opinion so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think there are enough people like you who are ready to confront the people who are going through things that are athletes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. That just demonstrates how we are continuing to have this conversation, how important the conversation is. Like, anyone who's watching this, you know, suicidal ideation is real. It is nothing for you to feel ashamed of. A lot of times when people do, you know, have these thoughts that they want to end their life, it's because they want to end the pain. And that's the means that they feel will do it, you know. Mm-hmm. But find somebody that, you know, like Alex was saying, that you can like trust and is willing to listen to you, because you know, suicide is a topic that people don't want to talk about. It makes them super uncomfortable, but you have people that once you identify them as somebody that you can trust, that they do want to, you know, listen to you and help you and support you navigate through that pain that you're feeling, in hopes that it is temporary and that you can get on the other side of that. But please do not suffer in silence. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't share, you know, resources. You know, I'll say it, the National Suicide Hotline, if you don't have a person that you can talk to. So that's 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255, the National Suicide Hotline. If you don't have a person that you can talk to about this. But thank you for sharing that. I know it wasn't easy.
Feels better though.
Mm-hmm. Glad you're still here. Glad you're here to share your story with other people.
I think that's more towards what I'm leaning towards, is being some sort of example.
Mm-hmm.
That like it can be all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but nothing to be ashamed about, to you and to anyone else who's listening, like, because we don't talk enough about our real feelings enough. And when we set that precedent that how we feel other than good or on the up and up doesn't matter, then it makes it difficult to talk about, hey, I'm not having a good day. Hey, I've been having suicidal thoughts. It makes it hard to have that conversation. So yeah, you keep that to yourself, or you feel shame about it because no one else is sharing that. But I think that we should be more supportive to each other so that we can have more open conversations like that. I think that a lot of things can shift in a more positive and productive way if we have more open and honest conversations and be more supportive of one another.
Thanks, Kendra. I know, don't you have to go at like 12:30?
Yeah.
So it's perfect time to wrap it up. Thank you so much.
Thank you.